Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Welcome, everybody, to Apple Pie Playground. This is the new show in the lineup on Sunday afternoons. I am so happy that you're here with me today. This is where we enjoy a little healing for the heart, and I'm your host, Valerie. Thank you also to BBS Radio. BBS, you are Radio with Heart. Thank you so much for having us on Sunday afternoons. We are letting our hair down every Sunday afternoon right here, and we are calling our inner child out to play a little bit. I like to think that I'm serving up slices of a little bit of remembrance of who we really are, you know, as spiritual energies in their human bodies. And our good work today is the restoration of our essential selves. And we'll talk about what that means as an essential self. Who are we as an essential self? We'll talk about that today. And, you know, our starting point is healing that starts with the inner child, the divine child. And it's a healing that navigates us back to instinctive unity with our source. It brings us back to our intentional selves, our spiritual selves, right? Our eternal selves. And that's what we're all about here, working together. So let's start with a little activity this afternoon as we open the show. You want to? Let's do something a little different than last week. Let's observe where we are right now in this moment right now together. How are we feeling this afternoon? How are we feeling? Just observe. We don't have to judge how we're feeling, but we can observe it, right? How are we feeling? So let me ask you, if I can, if you want to play along, let me ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how rewarding was your week last week? How rewarding was your week last week? Scale of 1 to 10. Where does that number hit for you as you think about your week and the experiences of your week last week? Let me ask you a follow-up question. Scale of 1 to 10, how rewarding did you want it to be, your week last week? How rewarding did you want it to be? And that's not a trick question. How intentional were you with your week? Did you intend to have a good week? And what did that intention look like for you? Did you set an intention to enjoy your week last week? And if you did, what did that look like? What did you do? And if not, you know, what might have helped to achieve a better experience last week, if anything? Sometimes weeks can be rough. You know, we have some rough days, we have some rough weeks, that's for sure. No judgment. We're just observing our responses, right? Thinking about our week and our feelings and the ideas that arise. We'll do some more of that today together. And so I want to thank you for doing a little reflection work with me today, you know, as we reflect on our week and our intentionality. Those things are important for us to put into our day, right? Into our week. Sometimes we get so busy we forget, and that's okay. But maybe we want to think about Monday and think about the week to come and see where we are with creating a little intentionality for our week, setting an intention. How will we measure that? What would it look like? What would it feel like, right? So we're going to talk today about our brains and how they inform our experience as spirits in our physical bodies. And just to be very, very open with you, I am going to offer probably some fairly critical reflection on our brains as micromanagers of our realities. So I don't want to be too critical and I don't want to be too harsh, but I do want to bring a fairly sobering conversation to the idea that sometimes our bodies and our spirits and our brains don't always work together to get the good work done of being intentional beings, being spiritually awake and aware in a physical body. Sometimes it's a struggle, and there are real reasons why. And we'll take a look at that today together. And I probably will say some things that are not readily supported by psychologists or neuroscientists or maybe even church ministers for that matter. And I anticipate that'll be okay as well. It'll be all right. I look forward to the conversation. I look forward to it adding value together as we sit together today and enjoy each other's company. I will say that there is new thinking coming out on how we could actually engage a more spiritual mind and how we can use logic and reason in spiritual practice. And so there are exciting things coming out with regard to the mind and how to awaken it spiritually. And we will talk about some of that in later shows. It is worth our time and attention, and folks are in some spheres very intent on creating new thinking about that and adding real value to what we do spiritually as folks with really huge brains. Okay, everyone, so let's get started with an idea that I want to be sure that we're clear about, because it's super important to communicate for understanding. And the idea is, you know, what is the essential self, so that we understand together? When we think about the essential self, and we talked a little bit about it last week, we're talking about our celestial self, right? Our spiritual self. And we're talking about our conscious self in our body. Okay, that which is animated by our energy or our life force. Think of it as a Star Wars term. Remember when Obi-Wan said the force is that which binds the universe together? That's our life force. So it's important to be sure that we're on the same page with that idea of the essential self, so that we're clear going forward together about what we're talking about when we get into a conversation about consciousness and being aligned with our essential self. And that's really experiencing the consciousness of our life force. And in many ways, we can think of that in terms of unified consciousness, right? We're a whole bunch of frequencies. We are unified in this life force that is source. Now, children don't know all of that, right? They're not metacognitive. They don't think about their thinking. So we say that children are collectively unconscious with respect to their life force. Okay. And that will take on more meaning a little later as we talk about Jung, because it's his idea. And we will talk about collective unconscious. And so that leads us into the question of, why do we point to our inner child when we talk about healing? I mean, what is it from the standpoint of collective unconsciousness and the child and the divine inner child that is important for us to start with as a healing point in our lives? And so we can think about childhood as a formative process. We go from an experiential existence, a sensory experience, living in the present moment, very quickly into a mental experience, don't we? We grow into our brains really fast as humans. And then our brains play this really bad trick on us, right, as we mature. And so as children, we function in a unified consciousness, in a flow state. We are in our hearts. We are in the moment. We are in our energetic field that controls who we are and how we manage who we are as a child. We'll talk more about that. And then the brain begins to do something truly undesirable, so to speak. And it begins to pack our subconscious mind, which we don't use a lot as a child. It packs this subconscious mind with impressions and ideas and memories, like a suitcase. Now, as children, like I said, we're not really conscious of what we're doing as a thinking being because we're in the moment. We're not critical thinkers who sit and review, our actions, our behaviors, what we're feeling, what we're experiencing. And so therefore we're an unconscious collective as children. And then our brain comes along and wants to pack that unconsciousness into a mental suitcase, right? We're going somewhere and we didn't even know. Our brain is packing us up. We didn't even know we were going somewhere, right? But we do in the mind. And so when we think about this evolution of childhood and collective unconsciousness, and then having that unconscious mind packed up and stored into this big, huge brain that likes to do all kinds of things with it, it's quite a trip, and it really moves us from our life force essential selves as human bodies. The transition is a very difficult one, and it's one that does not serve us as human bodies very well. It's one, a transition that moves us in the direction away from our essential selves. And we spend a lifetime either not understanding why we're suffering or trying to get back into alignment with our essential selves. And that all hinges on what the brain does throughout our lives as we move into adulthood. So let's talk about this idea of collective unconsciousness. And this is a Jungian idea. It's fairly iffy in the psychology world. Psychologists in large part have not adopted this idea. It's just now coming into its own, interestingly enough, because of the inroads that it has made in things like physics and mathematics, believe it or not. Alternative ideas there that are growing into their own quite beautifully, not so much in the realm of psychology. So we have this idea of collective unconscious, and Jung describes it as holding a universal memory that's shared among all humans, and that we add to. We, all of us in our physical experiences, add to this universal memory. And in fact, we're spirits that are unified by the energetic bonds of our spirit. We come through in birth into a physicality. And when we come through, this bond brings with it a reservoir of common experience. And that's why the divine inner child is something of an archetype. Right? It's an archetypal experience. It's foundational as human experience that kind of comes through in this universal memory through birth. And so the subconscious mind starts then recording our individual experiences in childhood. We come through with a sort of a reservoir of common experience. It individualizes as we move into childhood, and as our brains begin to start packing the mental suitcase, the cognitive suitcase, as it were, and our beingness moves toward what we do in cognition. And we don't really reflect critically as children on this subconscious storeroom that our brains are creating for us. It's going to throw in all of the stuff that we're experiencing, the memories, the struggles, all of that stuff, because we're not thinking critically about it. It is, you know, under the consciousness that we have. So it's subconscious, it's pre-conscious, and it's going to store all that stuff in a storeroom for us. And we grow into that storeroom that becomes bigger and bigger and bigger as we use these brains that begin to control our life experience. And so childhood experiences don't get a lot of self-reflection, and it's very easy to move the subconscious experiences of children into the brain, where they evolve into any number of things, and suffering is one of those things, one of those evolutions. It's kind of like the idea of ice cream we talked about, ice cream after dinner, and the idea that in our lifetimes, our job is to bring consciousness to this subconscious storeroom that our brains have created for us. And so the idea is, yes, we want ice cream right now. We may have to wait. Is there a consciousness around the decision to have ice cream now or to wait till later? Children don't make those decisions in a reflective kind of way, in a way that is highly conscious. But it is a need for our spirits to be able to learn how to do that as we move into adulthood with brains that are intent on moving us in a different direction. So let's think about what causes us to be hurt by trauma as children. I mean, somehow when you talk about trauma and crisis management, you think about the divine inner child archetype. You think about trauma as children. Well, there's a good reason for that, right? We're born with a spirit coming in, and we're born with virtually no mind energy. Okay, we don't have a mind identity. We don't have an ego identity. And then when trauma enters us as children, it's filed into this subconscious storeroom that we're talking about without being critically reviewed, right? And it's generally not resolved because children don't consciously sit and think about, you know, their issues and what happened and break it down and take a look at it. And so we have this storeroom of some of the subconscious experiences of children that have not been consciously reviewed, right? And so that begins the trauma and the pain pathways that our brain likes to create for us. And it affects our growth under the surface of our life experience because it's still subconscious for us. And so we move into adulthood with pain and suffering that probably a lot of us don't understand. And it takes a while for us to put together what the brain has stored and what we don't exactly understand, and then the pain that we're feeling physically, right? And in our heart space. So that's a lot of uncertainty that we're going through into adulthood, thanks to the old brain. And it's a lot to sort out, okay? Especially as we mature and we use more and more and more of our mind energy. It takes up more and more of our time. Okay, so what we understand as healing is really becoming conscious of the subconscious storehouse in our mind. It's a very simple way to think about healing. Maybe too simple, but it's a good starting point. It's the idea that we are healing because we are building a consciousness around our subconscious experiences. Okay, we're putting an awareness around the cognitive expressions of our trauma, if you want to use that catch-all kind of a phrase. And so healing really is about building conscious awareness, isn't it? And we're building conscious awareness with the energetics of our body that really probably has less to do with the brain than we realize. And the problem is that trauma is stored in the brain, right? It is a cognition. It's a cognitive activity. Suffering is a byproduct of a brain activity, right? And then emotion bodies come in. We'll talk about those sometime. And they hang around the body as a function of the mind as well. And sometimes the spirit actually uses emotional bodies kind of to buffer against suffering. We'll talk about that. But then when we practice conscious awareness, as we experience these traumas that come out of our storehouse of the subconscious, we take a second and we say, wait a second, let me take a look at this. Let me just sit down. Let me feel into this thing that I'm seeing, or this pattern that I'm seeing, or this experience or emotion that I am experiencing right now. And we can work through that and realign our energies. And that's really the goal, right, of what we're doing. So the question is, what happens that actually separates us from our heart space, our capacity to do this, to sit down and to feel into a situation and examine or bring to the surface something that might be subconscious for us, something that's causing suffering, and then we're not exactly sure what that means for us, except that using the brain to try to figure it out doesn't really work. And so we know that somehow there's a spiritual or energetic experience that's required in order for us to look into this suffering and to heal it. Right? Because working cognitively with the mind is just, it doesn't work. The mind loves to hold on to memory and to pain and to that storehouse, loves to build it by virtue of what it does. It's a memory machine, right? And we'll talk about that a little bit as adults. What does that mean for the mind to be a memory machine? So something interesting for me as I kind of lean into the idea of spirit and the energetic part of this body, I'm reminded of the idea that spirit really does not conceive of pain or suffering or offense. Okay, spirit is not part of this thing that we do. As we judge things, it's not part of the process of judgment. It doesn't do that. As a matter of fact, it avoids suffering. So if we are suffering, in fact, the spirit is operating at a distance. We can be sure of that. And we can be sure that there's separation there energetically as we're suffering. And that's why we say suffering causes separation for us. We know this instinctively because it is what's happening with our spirit. And suffering does cause separation of the spirit. Because spirit is in a perfect state and it remains in a perfect state, right? Spirit doesn't experience suffering. And we are not here to perfect our spirits in this physical realm with this physical body. That's just not what we're doing here, is it? And some of us can see that that might be the problem with the idea of sin, maybe. You know, the idea that I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I fall short, I'm not perfect, I can't find a perfection. Well, that takes us out of any opportunity for alignment, and we suffer through that and we call it sin, right? Just something to think about. And when I think about those kinds of connections with spirit, I think about what I refer to as the way of Christos energy. The way of Christ really was about alignment of the body's energy, about a zero point balance of energy in the body as we maintain our essential selves, our life force, right? That keeps the spirit connected to the body. That's really a goal for us. And a beautiful way for me to conceive of that is just the teachings of the way of Christos energy. And so I always keep that in the back of my mind, and hopefully we'll get comfortable together talking more about that. So the question is, what does control us at any given time? Where is our spirit? Where is it hanging out? Is it at a distance because we're suffering? Is our brain in overdrive and we just cannot move into alignment? Right? The mind works really, really hard to record and hold on to suffering. And so on this journey, you know, our bodies experience imperfection. Our brain records it and holds it and stores it. Even as we as spirits need that energy flow, we need the alignment to do what we need to do with this body to ensure that we are unified. And we can remain in an essential self, in an essential self that experiences spirit. And that's a tricky thing. So what happens to us as adults with our subconscious mind, you know, the subconscious storehouse? It's a conditioning of our minds, really. It's a conditioning to rely on our brains. And as a child mind, we are pre-conscious or subconscious or sensory driven, and we don't really use mind energy. We're really in our hearts. We're heart conscious because that's the center of our energetics. That's the center of our flow. We will talk a lot about that as we spend Sundays together. And I want to give you an example of that. The idea that there is a flow in the body and that it does come from a field centered in the heart. It's a toroidal field centered in the heart. And I think of it as this idea of the way and this idea of using our Christos energy as we're connected to our source and to each other. And if you think about a verse from the Bible that folks love to use because it's so very, very beautiful and it creates such a peaceful feeling. You know, Christ says, be lilies of the field, toil not or spin, right? Be lilies of the field. Well, friends, the reference there is a reference to your energy field, friends. It's your energy field, toil not or spin. Be in your flow, okay? Be in your flow. And so we move into adulthood and we spend 12 years of education, public schooling, private schooling. 12 years moves us, packs those suitcases, those cognitive suitcases, and moves us from our heart consciousness into our brains, right? Moves us from our heart center into the mind. 12 years of schooling. And that's meaningful because childhood trauma becomes very real in the brain. And it's not stored in the heart. It's stored in the subconscious mind. It's right where our brain put it. It's right where our brain controls it. It's right where suffering is created. Okay? Pain is a physical experience, and it becomes suffering in the mind as a psychological experience, and we move right on in. Suitcases are packed. And so we say, well, Valerie, what about times when our heart hurts? We have heartache. We have real pain right there in our heart. And I get it. Yeah, we do. It hurts. Well, that's because our heart is a central point of this energetic flow. And when we feel it like that, The pain is there because their energy flow has been disrupted. If you think about it, it's like blood moving through the body. If it can't move freely, then, things happen physiologically that tell us, okay, something's not right. Well, heartache is a painful disruption in that energy flow. And some of us see that and understand it. Some of us don't quite understand that yet, and it's okay. It'll be a point of conversation together that we have quite a bit. So, just a little note for those of us out there with broken hearts today, you have all of my love, and there is a way home to yourself, friend, and we will get there. We will get there. Be gentle with yourself today. So, let's talk about the mind as a memory machine very briefly. The mind does several things in a particular order, okay, with information. It encodes information, it stores it, it retrieves it, and it perceives the information as it's all collected and it returns back to our thought process. And that becomes our reality through the mind. The interesting thing about what the brain does with information is that it creates memory that is actually reconstructive. So what that means is the brain adds to memory the information that it gets in input. So that makes memory reconstructed or changing every time the brain adds new information in there, new input. And that makes human memory highly unreliable. And you can, read that just about anywhere about the human brain. Every new piece of information actually rebuilds the way that we perceive information or the world around us. It's why we say that our perception of the world is not the way the world actually is. It's just the way that our brain sees it with all of the information encoded, stored, and retrieved. Think about that for a minute. The idea that we are functioning with a brain center that does its best to create for us little more than perception of reality and not necessarily what objective reality is. And that's important for us because our good work, as we center ourselves in our flow and in our essential selves and the practices of coming back to self and our heart center, one of the first things we want to do is settle in and just move away from the brain. And we do that by deciding to just objectively observe what is around us. It's a very important activity for us to do with our spirits. We sit in observation, right? No judgment. We are just observing what arises in us. What are we feeling? What are we seeing? What thought is passing by? We don't hold back. We don't judge. We get out of the mind and we just observe. That creates this opportunity for an objectivity that our brain centers just don't have. And that's really important work, folks. It's a great starting point if you want to sit down and you say, I don't know how to do any of this spiritual stuff. I don't know where to start. Sit down and just observe. Just watch. Just observe and breathe and breathe. Because what the brain wants to do is develop an identity. And that's called an ego. And we're not going to call an ego bad. It does help us navigate this world. That's for sure. But the brain develops an identity. It is a cognitive thing. Identity is a brain thing. And it works very, very hard for self-preservation of that ego. And it cements an ego, puts it together based on a perception that you have of reality that the brain actually creates with the input that you provide it. And so we end up with things like attachment issues. We end up with limiting beliefs because that's what the brain creates, right? Now, the heart center doesn't conceive of these things. It's energetic. The spirit doesn't assume identity as a part of its frequency or what it does. It is a creativity environment in our spirit. That's what we do. We create, right? Very, very different from what the mind does. And so, you know, we came here to play a little bit. So let's play. We haven't done that yet. It's the fun part. It's the part that we all look forward to, I hope. So that was kind of a heavy conversation there. We're going to shake that off a little bit, right? And we're going to play a little bit. So grab a pen and a piece of paper, okay? Anything to write with, anything to write on. You may want to use a notebook going forward if you decide that that's a fun thing for you. It can be very, very helpful recording your ideas, perhaps. It could be a jumping off point for a little journaling every day if that's something that you like to do. So grab a pen and a piece of paper. We don't want to leave anybody behind. We want to all of us have our materials so that we can work together. I provide the play and you provide the self-reflection, and that is our fun self-therapy for the day. I'm going to ask you a question as soon as everybody has a pen and a piece of paper, or you have your notebooks out, your notepads out, and you're ready to go. And this question is going to inform our activity today, okay? So I'm hoping everybody has a pen and a piece of paper, something that you can use. As we go into our play activity, this is the fun part, right? I may actually need to do more of these because, you know, that everybody likes to have fun more than anything else, or at least I hope we do. So here's your question, okay? What persona did you love to assume as a child? What superhero maybe were you? What favorite character were you as a child? Was there a persona that you loved being? You wanted to play this persona. It was a part of your childhood or a part of your play, a superhero maybe that you loved, or you know, something, some persona who stayed with you that you identified with, and it was a beautiful part of your play. I want you to think back on that persona for just a minute. And maybe you had an outfit that you liked to wear. I don't know, a dress or a cape or glasses. Who knows what your persona liked to wear? A necklace or a headband? You know, did you have a weapon? Is there something that you carried around that was part of your persona? Did you have a sidekick? I mean, was your best friend always your sidekick or somebody you could depend on to play the other part of your, you know, your sidekick for your persona? Did you have superpowers, and what were they? What were your superpowers? What do you remember feeling as this persona that you loved so much to play? Can you find somebody? Do you have somebody in mind in your childhood? I hope so. Because this is what I'd like you to do, if you're inclined. On your piece of paper, make a list, okay? A list of 5 words that described you as your favorite character. Okay, the persona that you love to play. What are 5 words that describe you as that persona in your childhood? 5 words. It might be fun just to list the 5 words that just pop into your mind without, you know, thinking about it. Or you could be intentional and say, okay, let me choose these 5 words very carefully. It's up to you how you want to do it. But a list of 5 words that describe you as the favorite character that you like to play the most as a child. Maybe you had a couple. You might have to choose one. And so let's think about this. And I'm hoping that you have your 5 words, right? Let's think about those 5 words, okay? Let's think about ourselves today and look at your list of 5 words. How many of those words describe you right now? How many of those words describe you right now, sitting there where you are right now? And we can think about, well, if a lot of them describe us, what does that mean for us? You know, how have we brought that experience of childhood into a very lasting experience as an adult? Or maybe there weren't too many words on your list that still describe you now, sitting there. What might have changed in your life? What might have changed in your life that has changed the descriptors of maybe the persona that you are, right? That might be worth something to think about. And as we think about that, maybe we want to ask ourselves, well, if our words have changed, or if they're different, or if they're not on our list, is it because we kind of feel like somehow as a child we could be anything we want to be? But now we're on this wheel of having to be more and better and in control, and we work really hard maybe to be heroes as adults, but it doesn't feel the same, right? It doesn't feel the same. Maybe it doesn't look the same as our hero felt in childhood. It used to be easy. We could be anything we want, and now maybe we feel like we fall short. We look at our list and we start automatically judging, uh-oh, something's wrong because words have fallen off my list. Well, please don't do that, right? You're doing a great thing sitting here with me, observing these activities and having a little bit of fun doing it. And really, what more could we ask for? What more could we ask for? I remember my favorite character in childhood, and it was Captain Kirk, the USS Enterprise. Oh, every single time on the playground. And the thing about childhood and Captain Kirk was a lot of people wanted to be Captain Kirk. And the beautiful thing about being a kid was, well, you can have multiple Kirks, right? Who cares? You just have to make sure your mission is aligned, you know. So you might need to kind of team up a little bit and have a conversation on, you know, what the existential alien threat might be for the day. But otherwise, you could be a Captain Kirk and do whatever you want to on the playground. And you had your loyal followers and, you know, whatever galaxy you wanted to be in at the time, that was A-okay. And it was a wonderful thing. And I think back now and I think, well, how much of Captain Kirk do I have right now? You know, and that's a fun thing to think about. I dare say I am not nearly as adventurous as I'd like to be a lot of the time, as my Captain Kirk was. But no judgment, because it's a fun activity. It lets us be in the now, lets us reflect, right? We're learning how to reflect without judgment, how to feel into things and let things be okay, and let information guide us in a way that's not judgmental. And that's okay. Those are wonderful activities and skills for us as we, you know, sit with our spirit and observe openly and have a little fun doing it. Because the truth is, our inner child can be anything it wants to be. And it was until the brain decided that it was going to regiment everything and identify it and create a personality and grow an ego. And then everything, sort of all the input, created perception that's not even reality anymore, right? And that's very, very different from our spirit, because our spirit, like we said, is essentially the flow of creation energy. That's what spirit does. It doesn't have time for memory or history or future plans, right? It's creating right now in the now. That's what our spirit does. And the truth is, and we talked a little bit about it last week, the truth is there really is no such thing as anything but our present moment, folks, right? There's just, we have a memory, but that memory is culminated in the spiral of what is right now, in our eternal now, so to speak, which I love that idea. So what we do creatively is in the now. There's no such thing as a before, and there's no such thing as an after. And so we can choose to create anything we want to in this beautiful eternal now that we have without limitation. That's what the spirit says. But our brain likes to micromanage everything, and creativity is something that it does micromanage, right? Creates a perception of our reality. And so we think, well, if we work harder, we can be better heroes for our families or in the workplace or for ourselves. We can, when it used to be really easy, we didn't have to work hard to be a hero. It came naturally. Oh, I was a great Captain Kirk. Oh, you better believe it. And now I think about that, and I think about my adventurous side, and I think about being on the playground of life, right? And how beautiful that idea is, and how much I would like for that to be part of our adult experience as well. Getting ourselves back on the playground of life, letting that creative flow go, being with their spirits, and allowing ourselves to enjoy fuller spirits in this physical body, right? And we'll keep that in mind as we journey into our healing together, how to fill this body with spirit, how to fill it with the light of, our source creator. And that's an exciting thing when you think about it, because it's limitless. And that's what we are. We are limitless. So let's go ahead and turn our attention to the Dixit card that we did last week. Do you remember the Dixit card that we did last week? Do you remember we talked about creating a scene in our mind? And that scene would inform us of deeper ideas that maybe we wanted to think about. And that scene for us last week was, remember, we are playing an instrument, right? We're thinking about playing an instrument. We're going to allow to arise whatever arises, whatever is created in your moment. Pay attention to it and observe it. So you're playing an instrument, and the instrument is your body. You remember? And so the questions were, what instrument are you playing? And what music are you playing? Right? And how do you feel in that moment? And so I'm hoping that you were able to capture some of those ideas, maybe even put it in a notepad, in your notepad, or just think about it. That's okay too. What we're trying to do with our Dixit card experiences is our goal is to bring subconscious ideas and feelings and expressions into our consciousness, right? That's our goal. It's the really the first part of healing, is to bring that subconscious experience into conscious awareness. And that's what we're practicing. That's what we're practicing doing. And the goal really is to develop a consciousness that's capable of observing subconscious thoughts or ideas or feelings or expressions that arise. So that we can read patterns of our unconscious behavior. We can stop and say, okay, let me examine this or observe it, because now I'm creating the tools of being, of my awareness, of being aware of maybe something needs to be observed right now. Let me just sit down and move this experience into a conscious experience, right? And when you add breathing to that, deep breathing, where you sit and you say, okay, let me examine this or observe this thing. Okay, I'm feeling this certain way. Let me just, lean into this feeling, right? And observe what arises. And then you can add some deep breathing to that, because deep breathing is your immediate spiritual center in the physical body. Okay, your breathing will call in your spirit into your body. That might be hard to understand, but it's a very natural thing. Breathing is an autonomic event in the body. The body does it automatically, right? So you don't have to think about it. So when you focus on breathing, then the whole body takes notice of that. Oh, wait, we're doing something different with our breathing now. The whole body starts to focus, right? And the whole body takes note of what you are choosing to do intentionally with intentional breaths. And that is very elevating for you when it comes to connecting with spirit. It is a physical part of saying, hello, spirit. I am physically here breathing. This gets me out of the brain because your body now is refocusing on something you're doing intentionally. And it's very, very powerful. I don't know that you will ever find a spiritual practice that doesn't start with breathing, right? So it might be worth practicing a little bit, and it's not hard. All you need to do is just sit and allow yourself to breathe intentionally with awareness. And it's a very, very powerful thing. Okay. So Dixit cards are cards that we can use to describe a scene that lets us pull out deeper meaning. And so that's why we like to use them. And meaning is going to be different for every single person. And you will most likely, if you were to look at this Dixit card today, you may actually pull out different meaning today than you did last Sunday. Intentionally so. So let's do another Dixit card. You want to? Let's do another effort at moving our subconscious into conscious observation with another Dixit card. Okay. So here we go. I hope you have your notepad. If you'd like to record the information, otherwise you can just sit and think about it. But this is our new Dixit card. Okay. Imagine a scene now. You're going to let it just rise into your experience, right? You're going to observe it as it arises. Imagine a scene where you are a snail. Okay. You are a snail. And you are getting ready to climb a spiral staircase. Okay, that's the scene. You are a snail and you are getting ready to climb a spiral staircase. You're right there at the bottom step. Do you see it? It might be interesting to note what you look like as a snail. What do you look like? What does the staircase look like? Right? How many steps are there to get to the top of this spiral staircase? And maybe you're starting your way up. You're starting your way up, step one, step two. How does it feel going up this spiral staircase? Right? Do you want to go up? Are you excited to get to the top? And where are you going? I mean, where is this spiral staircase leading you? And of course, why are you climbing this staircase? What is the motivation to get you to climb this staircase? These are all questions to think about, right? And what we're doing is allowing feelings and ideas to move from our subconscious into an awareness and just take a look at what comes up. We're not trying to control ideas or feelings or information, but just observe how your scene unfolds, right? And you can take some notes on your notepad if you'd like to. I'll leave that up to you. But I hope that that was a fun process for you, and that you were able to pull some things up that perhaps you didn't have in your consciousness that now you can consciously observe. And hopefully that gives us a little practice, right, as we are working together every Sunday. And it is always my pleasure to be here with you. It is a wonderful, wonderful experience for me. And I hope that you gain some benefit being with me, and that something was worthy to take into your week with you this week, perhaps a practice or an idea or a thought, or just the idea that you want to be gentle with yourself. Love yourself. Your spirit is so very, very beautiful. And we're all here together on this thing, in this thing called life, aren't we? And we're walking together. And we're going to allow that to be a beautiful experience, right? So thank you so, so much for joining me on this wonderful Sunday afternoon, wherever you are. I hope to see you again next Sunday, same time on BBS. Another shout out to BBS. What a beautiful radio station with heart. Thank you so, so much, BBS, for making this possible. We're so grateful. Maybe get yourself a notepad for more self-reflection next week. I'll leave that up to you, but it can be fun. I hope you enjoyed our time together. I hope that there were things you can think about this week that are of value. And as always, be kind to yourself in all things, friends. Be gentle with your heart space, okay? It carries your life force, and now we know that. And so it's time for me to go home now, friends. And until next time, have a wonderful, wonderful week. And I can't wait to be back with you.
Time to head home, friends. Thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.